So these are just notes, but I was hoping they would help in some way. He's very frank in this chapter, charmingly frank, I think, about his own proclivities, especially about being jealous of other people. He goes on and on about how important it is to learn not to be worried about other people's success, and to just actually mind your own business, one, and two, enjoy other people's success, and three, to realize that your own lack of success is no measure of someone, that the measure is the kind of mind control one has over one's feelings. He starts out giving a case against anger, all the drawbacks of it. And sets up a kind of characteristic of patience about how we can be with our discomforts without getting enraged, whether it's road rage or just what's happening in the kitchen or with the children. And how to be with it, basically. How to understand our suffering and the pains, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. We can understand them as direct attacks on us. And then we attack back in some way. But if we see it as what's happening and take a wider perspective, then we begin to find ways of being peaceful in a sometimes painful world. We do suffer. We do stub our toe. We do run into uncomfortable and very unpleasant people. There are times when we can't avoid pain. And so his essential message is to use everything that comes to us as teachers for us, opportunities to practice the paramitas. He even at the very end, after he goes through all the ways of talking about his enemies and all the ways he talks about his various situations of success and failure, he says, finally, in the end, whoever we encounter, everybody is a Buddha. And so, of course, that's our opportunity to practice. We are meeting Buddha at every time. He has an example of a teacher who had a tea boy, someone who, in India, they always wake you up with tea. Somebody who was with him all the time and helped him out in every way. And the tea boy was an extremely irascible and unpleasant person. And the teacher was very, very grateful to keep the tea boy by him at all times as his teacher, keeping him on the straight and narrow at all times. Pema says, it's hard for us to believe that that's the way to be. But when you really think about it, it makes sense. Of course, no being angry is one of the precepts. It's the second to last precept. And it means, I promise that I'll try not to be angry. It also means there is no anger. That in the end, it's weather. That even the kleshas are weather, coming and going continually. We call it anger, actually Dalai Lama calls it hatred. He says anger is useful. Hatred is what we're really talking about as the dangerous klesha. And then the other way of anger is the Bodhidharma anger of, in the realm of the mysterious Dharma, no contriving a self in contention with another or as compared to another is what no being angry is. And that's, of course, the basis of all of this, that as soon as we contrive a self, we contrive every other. And as soon as we feel there's another, then we become very prickly about everything that happens to us. And that prickliness can grow from irritation to anger to hatred and create terrible problems for us and for whoever is in our path. And those whoevers are us also, our Buddha itself. So this is a very powerful subject. It helps to study the Dharma, especially around this subject. It helps to understand the ephemerality, the temporality, the the not so serious aspect of being a human being in the world. Not so serious meaning that there's a kind of transparency to our life that we tend to solidify when we become self-conscious, when we begin to protect and defend a self. And so the basic teachings of you could say in a way that the case that it's all made up, that however we're putting it together, it's a partial and very temporary understanding. And so being driven to such powerful emotions as anger and hatred is a little bit crazy. So the study of the Dharma in this very basic way is extremely important. One of the best ways of dealing with our emotions of anger is just to sit down with it. Just to sit down and be with it. Don't try to get rid of it. Throw it away. It can't be thrown. But if you sit down and face it and feel it, you begin to understand. Pema has a story in here about her relationship with her mother. She went to her teacher and said, "I don't know what to do about my anger against my mother." And the teacher said, "Well, why don't you for 2 weeks practice the feeling that you have against your mother and see how it feels? And then after the 2 weeks," he said, "why don't you practice feeling tremendous gratitude for everything that your mother ever did for you? And practice that for 2 weeks." And she did. And he said, "And which would you prefer? How would you prefer for the rest of your life to hold in your mind your feeling for your mother. Pema calls this chapter Working with Anger and talks about working with our mind. It is a kind of labor. It doesn't happen all by itself. And it doesn't happen as we labor overnight either. So there's a lot we have to forgive ourselves for. It doesn't help to be angry against myself either. Though often we tend to do that. We get the idea of some perfection, some unstained perfection, and then become very hard on ourselves. The last precept is no abusing the three treasures. And that means, first of all, no self-abuse. So I know not everybody has read the book, but I hope you all are following along with this. As you know, there are lots of versions, much smaller books that just have Shantideva and nobody else. So maybe I'll just open it up for questions and discussion now. Jane?
About anger is a really effective way of solidifying it is to make a case against the person. And the problem is that I don't know if anger does it for you or anger arises when insights arrive and you're seeing things the way you haven't seen them before. And maybe more clearly than you've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe anger is what... I don't know. There's a lot of energy brought to that situation.
Yes.
So... I would prefer not to solidify and hold on to a case against a person. But I also would like... And I would like to be able to... embrace or just accept what I'm seeing, which I think seems to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And quite requiring a lot of changes on my own part. So it just means moving along.
One thing that helps is to ask yourself what else is going on here, rather than making up a story from one's own point of view only, to begin to broaden the scope of it and begin to question what else is going on that I don't know about.
Yeah, and when I do that, I can find myself resisting releasing and opening up because I don't want to forget what I was mad about.
Yes.
And there's pride in that, but there's also a desire not to forget the truth that I've arrived at. And I understand there's closing down, but so I guess that's what I mean about wanting to move along and open up and,
yes,
and incorporate the learning into my life.
But not get stuck.
And not get stuck.
Yes.
And grab you about it.
Yeah. The other day I was at a meeting and it went on and people kept saying the same thing over and over and I got very annoyed. And thought it would never end. And then I got home and realized that the person who was repeating herself was really in pain, and I hadn't realized it, and that was why she was riding the same horse over and over again. It wasn't because she was so obsessed. It was because she was trying to express her pain. And I realized I hadn't looked hard enough at what was happening. I just was kind of stuck on my own irritation. You know, the great me is not feeling so great in this meeting. And poor she was not either.
Another mistake.
Yes. Yes, well, but that's the truth of it. Randy?
I heard a statement the other day and said the difficulties with mindfulness is remembering to be mindful. And my pain, my anger, when it flares up, that discomfort can be a reminder. Can be. It's not always. I'm far from perfect, but it can remind me that, oh, to be present, you know, at that moment, to remember to, because I'm invariably caught in the story.
Yeah.
You're in my way. You're for mine. Take a breath. Remember to come back to be here, you know. I think the Dalai Lama says an enemy is a much better teacher than someone close to us. So.
Yeah.
Because it, I don't know about y'all, but I practice because of my pain, because of my frustration, because of, so remember to do it. Is
yeah.
Practice.
That's right. And that's what this guy said 2,000 years ago also. We've been all working on this for a long, long time. Shantideva was not much liked in the monastery where he was, according to the story. And so you can tell as he talks about these things, he's trying to understand and not take it personally that when one is attacked, to see it as an opportunity for practice.
It's a little easier after the fact.
Yes, it is. Almost always.
Is this where count depend came from? Sometimes maybe 100.
Probably. It helps. Warren?
Angie, I have a problem. There seems to be, to me, a concept that's either being suppressed or is missing here. And I almost have to talk a different language to introduce it. But it's the concept of, on the one hand, the other with the big O. So this is all people, right? So there's not so much self and other as there is, you know, other and other, if you like. Or what relative to you is the other. And then there are boundaries. And in most modern thought, it's believed that certain boundaries are okay to have, that's one way you sort of control your personal space, your personal emotional space. And yet, that seems to be missing in Zen, and what in Zen there is this concept of no difference, no distinction. And yet when I think of it, I think, And even a monastery has a gate and sometimes a fence. And so it seems to me that there's something that needs to be developed within the concept of no distinction, perhaps, but somehow hasn't happened yet, or there's something else in our tradition that talks about that deals with this idea that you have to sometimes have protective boundaries, or sometimes have to protect yourself, or perhaps be able to make yourself so totally transparent that you don't need boundaries.
I know what you mean. And of course, that's what our whole psychological side is seeing now. That's how we're able to talk about this aspect of it. And when you read this kind of material, it says, throw yourself away. Just become a bodhisattva and throw yourself into it 100%, 100,000%. And I think it's what in Zen is called the two truths, that there's the relative truth of how to live and keep going in samsara, and how to ultimately see one's life, so that although ordinarily we live in the samsaric way, in order to integrate our life and practice with everyone, that if it comes down to it, that we're willing to throw our life away for the sake of others, and that we will. And it doesn't mean that we give way every time somebody pushes us, and we don't lie down on our backs with our paws up and let people walk over us. But to be willing to be there for everyone, and to be willing to endure what needs to be endured in order for the whole thing to keep flowing, rather than keeping coming up against a barrier that creates an explosion and a fire and everyone gets killed. It's both. I had this kind of discussion with Catherine Thanis the other day. It's the same kind of question. What is it when we throw our life away? Or be willing to throw our life away?
I noticed that in a lot of the stories, at the point at which the master acknowledges that the student is ready to go out and teach, at that point, he says to the student, be careful of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because don't just throw yourself away, because that would be too big a loss for everybody.
Yes, on the samsaric level, and on the other level, the student has already thrown himself completely away, which is why he's able to say that. It's okay, Jules.
I mean, at one level, that concept, I think, it seems like a very, dangerous one. I think I am as part of the world as anyone else. And I'm not trying to negate or it just... It's a concern that this idea of sacrifice, it's problematic. I mean, if we're all part of this same thing, then technically, I guess, no one should need to to bear the whole thing. I think people are bearing it. Everyone is kind of suffering. And why someone has to step in and whatever. It just sounds like some...
It's more like a couple of people are trying to get through a narrow door. So what? Either you can keep jostling and trying to get through the door yourself, or you can say, after you, Alphonse, please. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, manners is good.
It is about manners. Or Coben's example was two people in the desert with just enough water for one person to make it all the way to the village. What do you do? And he said, you let the other person go, because it is all... You give up your advantage. Yeah.
What about the concept of loving the sinner but hating the sin? Like Gandhi was saying, like, even the distinction between hatred and anger, because some things that people do to other people, I mean, I think anger is, it, I don't know, it just seems like a natural response, but hatred, holding on to that, like, you know, someone did you wrong, and so you're not going to let anyone else do you wrong ever again.
Yes.
That goes to hatred. You're blocking yourself mm-hmm. off in that
mm-hmm.
way.
Yeah. That's why I say anger is a kind of weather it passes through.
Yeah.
And you hope that your sight clears up and you can see a bigger picture. And often you see where the other person's anger is coming from, or their attack is coming from. Or if you see that they're just really lousy, rotten people from beginning to end, it still, as he says, gives you, you gain merit by withstanding and tolerating somebody else's attack if you don't attack back. He says he feels real sorry for those people because they're just having a terrible life. But he says, I don't have to have a terrible life because they do. We get to work with it and choose.
You have that reaction.
Yes.
Kind of mode.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I heard someone say once, it helps to have a healthy self-esteem before I try to release self. Time I have difficulty with the bodhisattva idea. I'm not sure I believe. Sometimes I like to believe. But the truth is, I don't know if I do. Because the self, the Randy, sometimes sometimes it feels like pretending. I feel phony. I feel like I'm doing something that's not, that goes against the me needing to defend myself. And so I think the difficulty is, a part of the difficulty for me is distinguishing, you know, as I grow more in understanding, I'm able to let go more and to be more of the bodhisattva without you taking from me, without from a self-esteem perspective, from a diminishment of, well, I'm to a low self-esteem level, to where I'm no good, but I'm by giving up I'm gaining. My understanding is growing, my awareness and my enlightenment is growing. So it's a different perspective.
I think that's why often the emphasis on teaching is about the self-concept. Because as long as we are wedded to ourself, we get tangled up in just the way you describe. And if we can sort it out and actually see that it's not a substantial thing at all, then...
And once you've had a peek.
Yeah, but you can even deconstruct the self in through the five skandhas just by going through it one at a time and begin to see how it all operates, and that although it coheres in a temporary way, moment by moment, long term it's just a dynamic that we call myself. But the truth of it is that it's form, feelings, perceptions, impulses, and consciousness all operating together to build up the story. And one way of being with that story is to deconstruct it over and over. Oh, this is coming from the impulse that came from, the feeling that came from, and just track it back to the actual cause and condition of that particular moment. So we can be scientific about it as well as psychological. And it, scientific is...
going to a self-loathing place. It's not...
Yes.
It's not an enlightened state either. It is as far and as much a problem of self as...
Oh, I understand. Yeah.
Giving up.
Yeah. Oh, we all know that place, I think. Yeah. Well, it's 8 o'clock.